out things, so I share it with you. Usually you have two copies, remember?
Oh, I didn't get one today. So I only had one. Karen, is it okay if we start? Okay. I'd like to welcome everyone to the regular session of our City Council meeting for February 20th, 2024. Welcome everyone that's visiting. Our first item is the a thought and the Pledge of Allegiance from Councilmember Ted Melton. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. All right, in the spirit of the first thought of a new term, I was reflecting on principles that I think are good for being an effective city council person. And one of the issues that we always confront in government is how we deal with, one phrase is pitchforks and torches. People that turn out against something en masse, and how do you respond to that? We know that people that oppose a decision are much more likely to turn out than those that are in favor. We know that those people that are affected closely, they live next to a prospective decision, a new apartment or what have you, are much more likely to turn out than, you know, maybe somebody that lives 200 feet away but might silently be in favor of something. So that's the issue. Part of the issue is that if we are only driven in our policymaking by pitchforks and torches, then we might end up having a city that is worse. You can think of all kinds of decisions that fit this. It could be a major park, a major trail, an interchange, an apartment building, things that might have a benefit, but those that are right next to it, understandably, very understandably, are opposed to it. And I think there's this principle that, as I've been reflecting on it, of, so what do you do? I just wanted to reflect on this for just a minute, and I hope this doesn't come across as lecturing, but I was just trying to think through, so what is the way forward? And I think it does make sense, A, to actually give people that turn out and are most closely affected, they do have more of a voice than anybody else. They should. They should have more of a voice than anybody else, but we should not make the decision only on their input. And so what else should we consider? Do we have a sense of what the majority of residents in the city think about something? Can we get a sense of that? Can we get a sense of our overall population on a question? That's one. Two, what about future residents? What about those that don't live here yet? Can we consider their impacts or benefits? Three, geographically, there are issues that we might face in a city that have benefits or negatives beyond our border. That those considerations actually matter too. Even if they're not a resident of our city, they are a person. And that should be part of our calculus as well. And I think that part of what I'm thinking about these kinds of things is that as decision makers, when we have a contentious question and we might face, I won't use the phrase pitchforks and torches because I think that people have well-meaning, important points to make, but they're just not the totality or the overall message that that we might take into consideration, that we ought to be transparent about these other considerations. The majority of residents that may not live here yet, a broader geography. And it could even be misinformation, that people might be motivated by incorrect or incomplete information. I think if we're transparent about these other considerations, it'll help us be effective city council people. And so I wanted to share that thought of policymaking by pitchforks and torches and how we as a council might address those kinds of considerations in a thoughtful and transparent way. So I hope that's helpful. Please join me in a Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ted. Next item is a public comment period. If there's anyone that would like to address the council, please come forward, state your name and address, and we'll limit you to 3 minutes.
D. Lawless. Last week at the Planning Commission, there was a proposal, and tonight you have it on your agenda, that they're abandoning or removing an easement on a piece of property. And I noticed that subdivision has about 5 or 6 more of those easements across the back of their property. And every time you do that, you have to have a public hearing. And I know that as I've been sitting in these meetings from time to time, that there are several places around up on the hill and other places where you have abandoned easements on there. And I was wondering if you could take it and have a general, somebody go through there and say, we have already abandoned this one. We've got 5 more that are going to need that sometime. And take some city initiative and tell those people, yeah, we're going to do you a favor by getting rid of this easement. Number one, it would eliminate a lot of extra public hearings that have to be done in the Planning Commission. And it probably would make you a few points with those people that said, yeah, that's great of you to do that.
Thank you, Dee. Anyone else here to address this? Okay. Next item is a presentation and just a little background here. I've known Curtis Bennett for a lot of years and remarkable man. He is going to introduce us to the City Kindness Initiative. What was it, 2 weeks ago?
10 days
ago, we, Alisa and I, accompanied Curtis to Orchard Elementary School, where we presented this to the Orchard School, and we're hoping to get into the other 2 elementary schools in our city in the near future. But this is a great thing that he's doing, and so I am going to turn the time over to him and let him dazzle us.
Mr. Mayor, council members, staff, thank you very much. It's a privilege to be here. My name is Curtis Bennett. I have been a resident of North Salt Lake City for 20 years. Loved it here. I come with Mason Bennett, who happens to be my son, and who happens to also be a resident of North Salt Lake City, and also happens to be a member of your Health and Wellness Committee here in North Salt Lake. We also come with Lily Drake. She is not a citizen of North Salt Lake, but that's okay. She's a highly valued member of our One Kind Act Today team, and we're grateful to have her here with us today. I have a clicker. Okay. This one on the right? Okay. So I am the executive director of an organization called One Kind Act Today. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to present to you what it is that we do in this in all communities and what we strive to do throughout the nation. If you were a member of our kindness community, which you can do quite simply by taking the kindness pledge by going to thepowerofkind.org, you would see on twice a week, on Monday and on Friday, a kindness quote or a kindness prompt. One of my favorites that we've been able to share with those members of our community in the past has been this one. 3 things in human life are important. The first is to be kind, the second is to be kind, and the third is to be kind. And I really like this. It boils it down to this most important and significant value. Kindness is a constant campaign to many things. It's a companion to respect. It's a companion to honesty. It's a companion to kind or to integrity. It's a companion to honor. I'm genuinely appreciative of this particular comment. In April of 2022, a local businessman by the name of Khosro Semnani was troubled. He was troubled by the weaponization of COVID. He was troubled by the weaponization of politics. He was troubled by looting in the streets and rioting. He was troubled by a lot of different things that were going on in the country, causing a lot of contempt and disagreement and a lot of discord. And he felt like that there was something that needed to be done. And he decided that he wanted to encourage people to a single deliberative act of kindness a day. And if he could do that, then we could literally change the world. No one knows what the incalculable effect is, the ripple effect, the butterfly effect of a single kind act, how far it goes, what it will accomplish, what it will do. And so Mr. Semnani, in April of 2022, founded this organization and then endowed it with a significant amount of money so that we neither seek for nor accept donations. Now, it's important because when we come to cities or when we go to schools or when we go to religious organizations or when we go to businesses and when we work with them and talk with them about kindness initiatives, we provide all of the resources that we bring to bear at no cost to that organization. We're not asking for donations. We don't seek for donations. We're not asking you to do any fundraising. We come here with the hopes of being able to promote kindness within our society and within our schools and businesses and cities. So that's the purpose and that's the mission of One Kind Act Today. We believe it is the responsibility of businesses, of communities, of educational institutions to amplify, advocate, and exemplify the value of kindness. We believe it is our responsibility and self-imposed mission to amplify, advocate, and exemplify and help those organizations and cities promote kindness within their community. And so that's what we do. And we love doing it. This is just an example of a number of the different partners that we have. We have no sponsors. No one pays for the right to be up there. If they volunteer and they want to be part of our community, we include them as a partner with our organization. And that is just a small group. We work, as I said, with a lot of businesses. We work with schools and cities. And we have certification programs, which I'll talk about in just a moment. Lily, one of the great jobs that she has is she gets to go from business to business and encourage them to become a partner. And so you have, for example, a couple of businesses there who have chosen to help us to promote our message. Again, we don't ask for them to do anything except for it to be kind. And sometimes they'll put a placard in their business, sometimes they'll put a window cling in their business, sometimes they'll put a yard sign, sometimes they'll put a feather flag outside of their business. And it's not that hard to do. And we find an awful lot of people who are very willing. And when we say sometimes that there's a hunger for kindness, in many respects there's a starvation for kindness in our society today. And so we don't find it very difficult for people to quickly connect to the whole concept. Kindness is not a soft skill, it's a tough skill. It's really hard to be kind when somebody is treating you with a high degree of disrespect. It's really hard. It's a hard skill. It's tough to be kind when somebody is disrespecting you or insulting you. And so when people say this is kind of a squishy thing, it's not. It's really a hard thing to do. And so what we try to do is we try to bring to bear resources that will help people to be able to develop that skill. One of the things that we have started recently is what we call a certified city of kindness. We have certified schools of kindness as well. We have certified businesses of kindness. But the certified city of kindness proclamation is a really wonderful program and a wonderful activity. It gives us the opportunity to be able to work with the city and tailor make a program for them. When we come to a city or when we come to a school, we come, for all intents and purposes, with research, and you've heard me say this, we come with research that says these are the benefits that you're going to find in having a kindness initiative within your community. For example, you'll find that inclusion is more broadly accepted. You'll find that people feel safer in their community. You'll find that the police force feels better about their community as well. There are a number of different reliable benefits that we can show you. What we don't presume is we don't presume to know exactly what your city needs. And so when we come to the table for a certified city of kindness initiative, we come with some best practices, we come with some ideas, we come with things that we know that have been successful in the past. But you know your city, you know your constituents, you know what it is, you know what your objectives are, you know what you're trying to accomplish. And so what we prefer to do is we prefer to sit down with the stakeholders and decide what is a perfect tailor-made program for the city of North Salt Lake. Let's put it together, and then we'll bring whatever resources that we can to bear to help you with that. So for example, in the city of Vineyard, you have on the city Mayor Julie Fulmer, who received a the proclamation of City of Kindness. She received it from our founder, Khosrow Semnani, who's on the right. First Lady Abby Cox is a supporter of this initiative, and she signs the proclamation. It came signed with Derek Miller from the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce. The Utah Valley Chamber of Commerce also wants to be a supporter of this. Counties are now wanting to be supporters of this. It was signed by the mayor herself. But when the city decided that they wanted to do a particular kindness initiative, we worked with them with the schools. We provide stickers and banners for the schools. We helped them with the 5K. We helped them with a parade. We provided for them, you'll see on the one side, we provided for them banners and yard signs. They put yard signs all over the city promoting kindness. We provided all these things for them. The banners and the yard signs say this city supports One Kind Act a Day. I'm going to go backwards for just a second. When she asked if the city staff could have T-shirts for One Kind Act a Day, we provided all the T-shirts for the entire city staff. And we did any number of different things. We can provide speakers. We can provide a number of different resources for the city if it's something that they choose to do. On the right, on my right of that particular image is Lindsay Heinig. She's one of my new heroes. Lindsay is the principal at Monticello Academy. And the reason why I really appreciated the mayor and Van Langefeld, councilwoman Van Langefeld, to come out with us to the school was because children are amazing mentors. And when children dive headlong into these kindness initiatives, they do amazing things and they teach us an awful lot. And one of the most heartwarming things that we do is we work with schools and we learn an awful lot from these kids and we learn an awful lot of what kindness really means. And we see some amazing things happen. Lindsay, the principal at this particular school, they decided that they were gonna set a goal of 10,290 acts of kindness. The way they came up with that number was there was a certain number of staff and there were a certain number of students. Their kindness initiative was going to go for 22 days. They did the math. It was easy math. And they came up with 10,290 acts of kindness. Fortunately, there was no algebra. I would have never figured it out. But within the first week and a half, they had surpassed their 10,000. And by the time they were done at 22 days, they had done over 41,000 acts of kindness. The kids were involved, they were engaged, they had a ton of fun, and the teachers had a ton of fun, and the parents had a ton of fun as a result. There was nothing but great reports on the things. When we go to schools, and the mayor and our great councilwoman there, when we were there, the principal said, "You mean I don't have to sell cookie dough? I don't want to sell cookie dough anymore. I don't want to do that. We're not asking her to raise funds. We're not asking for funding. We're happy to provide the resources that she needs in order to be able to do this." The last thing that I would say is with the kindness initiative, by the way, this one on the left, that's a dual immersion academy. They're a Spanish to English school in West Valley. We have a number of initiatives going on with a number of different schools. But the last thing that I would say is when we talk to most people about what it is that we try to do, whether it's with a business or a community or school, the most common response that we hear is, why would we not do this? I haven't come up with a reason just yet. What it could look like for the city is, if the city so chose, there have been cities who made a resolution that this is something that they want to do, and then we just sit down with the city staff and with the selected people from any committee, whether it's a wellness committee, and we come up with the right program. This is one of the other ones that I really, really like. I have wept in the night at my shortness of sight, that to others' needs made me blind, but I've never yet had a twinge of regret for being just a little too kind. And I would love, not only as the executive director of One Kind Act Today, but I would really love, as a citizen of North Salt Lake City, to be involved in a citywide kindness initiative. I'd love to be able to involve the schools. I'd love to be able to involve your city. I'd love to bring all of the resources to bear that we have. And I'd love to commit as a resident of North Salt Lake, and I'll wager that I could say the same for Mason, that we would make sure that you had our very, very best efforts to make sure it was a successful effort. With that, are there any questions?
Well, I can say that I love this. I agree that Ted and I were just saying that kindness has gone a little bit on the short side maybe in the last couple of years, and that's something that maybe we can bring back to popularity. My son ordered from DoorDash the other day, and on the counter when I got home, there was a tulip and a note, a handwritten note, and I thought, quick calculation, Valentine's is over, Mother's Day isn't yet. And I asked him about it, and he said, oh, that was from my DoorDasher. And in the note it said, one act of kindness leads to another, so my only request is that you pass it on. And I just thought, what a beautiful thing that one DoorDasher could create that chain of events. And this, of course, is the same concept. I asked him if it made a difference to him, and he said, well, I actually went on and gave her a 5-star review, which I never do. So
very good.
Kindness also is reciprocated, but I love this. And so why would we not want to do this?
So I can see this being implemented. The council here, we could all be kinder. Our city staff could get on board. How do we get it out to 25,000 residents?
So that's an excellent question. The one of the things that we have learned in our experience is that, and whether we meant to do this on purpose or it was by accident, truly the real human epicenter in any community is a school. And why is that so? Because when we go and we do a kindness initiative in a school, the parents hear about it. And the parents are our business leaders, and the parents are our religious leaders, and the parents are involved in city activities, and the parents do a lot of different things. One of the stories that Lindsay told was that she got a call from one of the parents, and they said, what's going on? And she said, please explain. She said, there's something up with my child. And she said, again, please explain. Well, he got up from the table last night and took his dishes to the sink, and nobody asked him. I didn't think much of it until he took the garbage out on his own, and I didn't say much about that either. Until I went up to his room to say goodnight, and I found his room was clean, and I thought, what in the world is going on? And he reported that in our school, we're doing a kindness initiative. And we were encouraged by our teachers to come home and do whatever we could at home. And that's ultimately what we want to do, is we want all of this to permeate to the home. Everything should permeate to the home, however that home looks, whether it's one person or many people, how I see it or how you see it, it doesn't matter. We want it to permeate to the home. But the teacher called up the principal and said, so what's going on? Well, we're doing a kindness initiative. And the student was encouraged to come back and report how many acts of kindness they had done for their parents. So she asked, how long is this going on? She said, 22 days. She said, can you do it all year? We'd love to see this go on all year long. And but that is one of the ways in which we can help get this to the 25,000 residents of North Salt Lake. The other way to do it is to get the businesses involved. if you can allow us, as we have the opportunity to work with North Salt Lake, we would be happy to bring again the resources to bear to go and visit your local businesses and say the City of Salt Lake is involved in a citywide initiative. Would you be willing to put one of our placards or a window cling or a feather flag as part of this? And again, that's just an effort that we would be willing to do in order to help the businesses become involved as well. But there are a lot of different ways. And again, through your health and wellness, the research for kindness is not just good, it's overwhelming on how good it is for the human organism. And the reason why it is so heartwarming is because it's so good for the heart. And the reason why it reduces anxiety is because it's so good for the heart. There are studies that show that it reduces anxiety, it wards off depression, it masks chronic symptoms of major diseases. And there are even studies out there that suggest that people who are kind are better looking. So, there are lots of ways in which we can promote this within a city. That's why I need it so bad, and that's why I joined up. But there are lots of different ways that we can do this. But the schools are a human epicenter to it all.
Sir, I had to say one thing, and this is 25 years ago. I'm a lawyer. Sure. And on the side of an initiative against Khosrow Semnani. Uh-huh. The initiative was Radioactive Waste Restrictions Act, mm-hmm. when he owned EnviroCare. Mm-hmm. And the campaign was not very pleasant. Mm-mm. But what I'd like to say about that is that we all can do better over time. Mm-hmm. And so I will support this and say that we all learn sometimes the hard way about how much easier it is to get through life being kind.
So I appreciate you making that comment. One of the things that I have been most impressed at is Khosrow Semnani said the one that has been impacted the most by this whole initiative has been him, right down to his driving, he says. And that he says that's saying a lot. One of the things that he said, we were in the presence of another psychologist, he said, it's become second nature to me. Psychologist said, well, it's not your second nature, it's actually your first nature. The human organism is meant to be kind. Your second nature is when we default to frustration, when we default to anger, when we default to contempt, and then that becomes our second nature. Our first nature is to be kind. And so, but I appreciate the comment, you're right.
Thank you for being here. I enjoyed your presentation tonight as well as when we were visiting at Orchard Elementary, and I think this is a fantastic program. I'm excited to be involved with it. We've already, Mason has brought this to the Health and Wellness Committee already, and there's already some good excitement and support there. So if the City Council is interested, that is something that the Health and Wellness Committee could take on and start creating some ideas of what this might look like in our city and then bring that back to work with the organization as well as to City Council and to staff to say, here's how we could see this working in our city.
And I could see, David, I'm putting you on the spot again, but David does a lot of initiatives with our employees, and I think this would be a natural segue on some of the things he's doing. And so I'll just echo the why not comment.
We have a organization, fairly sizable business, that's in the midst of their kindness initiative, and one of the things that they decided that it's impossible for them to be good to their clients and vendors until they can be nice to one another. And so the first phase of their initiative was internal, all internal. And then they chose that their second phase would be more externally faced. But you're absolutely correct.
I'll just say that I'm 100% on board with this. I love it. I think we need more kindness. And I wanted to just relay one thing that I've heard that I think is a misconception. This is similar in some ways to like the dignity index, mm-hmm. and efforts like that, which I fully mm-hmm. support. And
so do we.
Great, awesome. Yeah. I've heard people say, so what you want us to do is to just not disagree anymore. Is that it? Is that you just don't want us? You just want us to just be quiet and not talk about our points of disagreement, which I think is totally a misconception. And it's not it's not in this case with regard to dignity. It's not disagreeing less. It's just disagreeing better. And I think, and I guess part of what I'm saying is I'd love to have the notion of kindness relate perhaps to the dignity concept as well.
So one of the kindest things an employer can do is to let an employee know where they stand, exactly where they stand. It's a lot easier to cop out, but it's a kinder, better employer who says to an employee, this is kind of where you're standing right now, so that there are no surprises. And an employee, I think, would rather know. And so, but it takes a lot of courage to do that. So it's harder to do.
I do want to say something. Last week was Random Act of Kindness Week, and Saturday was Random Act of Kindness Day. Mm-hmm. And I don't think very many people know that, but and I read something about that, and it said, it doesn't have to be a big act. It can be a smile, hold the door, you know, do something very little, send a text. And I obviously we're all on board at this, but I mean, I took a picture of your one of the slides that was in here because we do something, we try to say something kind or nice every day in our morning meeting. And I thought, I'm going to use this tomorrow because it can trickle down from here to our workplaces all over the place. So I think this is a great program.
If I could say one thing to that, this is a kindness coin. And the best way to get kindness to live on is to stop, recognize it, and celebrate it. We need to stop for a second, recognize that kindness, and then celebrate it for just a moment. So let me illustrate. This kindness coin has never been mine to keep. It's always been mine to give away. This kindness coin now belongs to Wendy because she did a real nice kindness for us earlier today. She got my presentation up on the screen. The best way to get it to live on is to stop, recognize, and celebrate. So I celebrate her kindness. I'm going to leave this for her. I know I'm not allowed to give gifts, but it's not for her. It's for you to give away. Okay? It's not for her to keep. We can provide these kindness coins for all the staff, but you're exactly right. I mean, as we celebrate this and as we stop for a second and recognize that it lives on, it ripples on. So,
well, thank you so much, Curtis, and to your team, and we'll be in touch.
Okay.
And I guess I should say Wendy's always kind, so that's just a given.
That's what I was told anyway, so yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Next item is consideration of appointment to the Health and Wellness Committee, and I'll turn it over to Council Member Van Lingeveld.
Thank you. Well said. I am thrilled for our latest appointment to the Health and Wellness Committee. Recently, former member Valerie Walton had vacated her position. She was very helpful and really served so well on the committee. She had such a reasoned way of thinking about the topics we were discussing, and she helped us stay on track and get back on track and stay focused. So she will be missed on the committee. However, I am thrilled for our new appointment. Most of you know Colin. I'll introduce him, and then Colin, if you'll come up, and then you can share anything you'd like as well with the committee. This is Colin Larson. He is a resident of North Salt Lake. He lives in the Foxborough area, and as you know, he ran for city council in the last election cycle, and as part of that campaigning, really came to know the community, really came to know residents across the city and some of the areas of concern for them, whether that is in more legislative pieces or if it is in their own health and wellness. So I think he brings an expertise and a real connection to the community that is going to benefit the community very much.
Thanks, Elisa. I guess I don't really know what to say. I'm honored that you guys wanted to have me on the committee, and I'm excited to hit the ground running in it and help the people of North Salt Lake. I really appreciate everyone here's consideration. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Colin. I'll entertain a motion.
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I don't have the language in front of me, so I hope I get it about right. I move that the council approve the appointment of Colin Larson as a member of the Health and Wellness Committee.
I second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Colin, a simple majority, you passed. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item is consideration of a plat amendment to combine lot 1817 of the Eagle Point Estate Phase 18 subdivision with parcel number 01-120-0084 and to vacate the public utility easement at 935 South Silvertreen Lane. Did I get that all right, Sherry?
You did. Several years ago, one of the property owners along this property approached the school district about selling an additional 10 feet of property to him and his wife. And then he went and proceeded to get all the other neighbors on board, and they all decided that they would all buy the 10 feet from the school district. And so they have this separate little parcels on their property. If they want to utilize them just for yard area and not put a structure on them, there's no problem with where the location of the utility easement. It's when they want to put a structure over that property line that we run into a problem. And so we've had an application from this property owner, and incidentally, the notices that went out to the other property owners brought this to their attention that they needed to do this because they wanted to do this in the future, and they're actually getting together to save costs on. So you may see another application in the near future that takes care of the rest of these. I would love it if I could go around and identify everybody who didn't need a public utility easement, but I just don't have that crystal ball. And the costs associated with the plat amendments that would have to happen too is not something that I think that my budget or your budget would bear. But I did like that idea. And I think just for everybody's knowledge, when we sit down and meet with a property owner like this and there's a similar situation on their neighbor's property, we encourage them to go talk to their neighbors to see if they want to share the cost of the surveyor to do that plat amendment and do both of their lots or however many there are. And we've done that numerous occasions. And sometimes they work together and sometimes they don't. Some people just aren't interested until they actually need it. So that's an aside from that. Anyway, this is at 935 South Silvertree Lane. As you can see, this is a plat amendment. It, under the state code and our ordinance, that requires a public hearing whenever you vacate a public street or a public utility easement. The Planning Commission held that public hearing last week. We did not receive any comments at that public hearing about the vacation. We do also send out notices to the abutting property owners in the area and anyone within 300 feet of the plat amendment. We also send that public notice out to all of the affected entities, so all the utilities that we have addresses for. We have a big long list. There's about 20 of them. We got a couple of calls back, one from Dominion and one from Kern River, who said they have absolutely no objection to this public utility easement being vacated. They have no plans on using it. And we did not receive anything from any of the other utilities like Rocky Mountain Power or anything. But this is a fairly simple plat amendment, and the Planning Commission has recommended approval of this plat amendment with no conditions.
Thank you. Any questions on this? Do I have a motion?
Yeah, I'll make the motion. I make the motion that we adopt the plat amendment to combine lot 1817, of the Eagle Point Estates Phase 18 subdivision parcel number 01120-0084 and to vacate the public utility easements at 935 South Silvertree Lane. The applicants are Deb Kilpack and Matt Russell, Build Utah.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's do roll call, starting with Tammy.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes unanimously. Next item is consideration of site plan approval for the North Salt Lake Synergy at 480 West, 900 North.
Okay, great. So just to give you a little bit of background on this particular application and for our new members so that you understand how our code is written. So most commercial site plans are all reviewed and approved by the Planning Commission. We do have a caveat in that if the lot size is greater than 5 acres or the building size is greater than 30,000 square feet, then the Planning Commission is a recommending body to the City Council, so the City Council is the final approval body of this. So this is an administrative action, it's not legislative. It's just a matter of, does this application meet the standards of the code? Okay, so again, this is over on 900 North. The property is 8.16 acres in size, which is why it's before you today. It has an existing 12,000 square foot office building with a service bay and a wash bay on it. The applicant is Synergy, NSL Synergy. They are a lubricant distribution facility. And so they don't make the lubricants, they don't package the lubricants, they house the lubricants, and they ship it out to their customers. They plan to add a 19,000 square foot building to the site, and it will be used for that storage and distribution. The property already has two existing accesses onto 900 North. There is some existing landscape that I'm going to put in quotes along the road if you've had the opportunity to drive over there. It has, I think we call those native weed mixes, but it does have some beautiful street trees that are already built there. I don't know if those weeds used to be grass or if they were just, like I said, the native grass mixture on there. But there is no irrigation for that. As part of the upgrade to this site, the applicant is going to come in and remove all of the weeds, leaving the trees, put in some rock mulch and other plant material, as well as a drip irrigation system for the trees to make sure that they stay very healthy. And so I just wanted to give you an update to how they're going to improve that landscaping and how that is going to improve on the streetscape. The existing buildings sit back about 195 feet from the street. They have an asphalt parking area that is not striped, so they're going to stripe that parking area for their parking. They are providing, they're really only required to have 35 spaces, and they'll have 74 spaces with 3 ADA spaces. They don't have a lot of customers come to this location. It's mostly just employees that come there. There's not a retail component of the site. We encourage them not to add more landscaping because we didn't want to encourage more water use, but we did want the improvement of the landscaping there along the frontage. As far as the building goes, they have worked with us to meet the standards for our building design for commercial buildings, and so they made several changes to their front, to the facade, including some stucco applications on the front side and the roof variation with those additions of those clerestory windows and then the awnings that cover their doors. There was one correction to their site plan that was needed for the engineering with regards to their detention. That's the other thing that they're upgrading, is this site has never had detention. It's just drained directly to the storm drain. And so they've done all their hydrology calculations and they're providing on-site detention and metering that water going into the storm drain. So it's a big improvement there. That engineering red line had been corrected before the Planning Commission meeting. And so the Planning Commission did make a favorable recommendation on this with no conditions.
Thank you for this. There's a lot of work that's gone into this, it's obvious, and thank you for that level of detail. I have a question about the existing trees. So can you go back to the slide before this? There are a lot of trees that are indicated on this plan. Are there that many trees already there?
Yep.
Wow.
They're all full grown. They look they're really nice. So
that's fantastic.
Established.
Great. I love that.
Any further questions? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion, Mayor. I move that the City Council approve the requested site plan for NSL Synergy located at 480 West, 900 North with no conditions.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, Sherry. That passes. Ken, can I put you on the spot just for a second?
Yes, sir.
Walk us through the life cycle of this, using this business as an example of sales tax. So product, they go out and purchase product, I assume, from refiners or whoever, bring it into this site. And so there's a taxable transaction there. And then they ship it out to various locations. And that, I assume, creates another taxable situation that we would enjoy as a city. Is that?
So there's lots of rules about sales tax. Some of their transactions are not taxable. It's likely that they are wholesaling product if they're a distributor. If they have retail sales at their location, then the city will benefit from a point of sale sales tax transaction. With the industrial park in general generates a large amount of sales tax for the city, but not all businesses within the industrial park are sales tax generators, if that makes sense. So it really depends on the structure of what they do and how they do it and who they're selling it to and how those transactions are coded in by the Utah Tax Commission. So if they're wholesale and if there are different types of equipment and things that don't qualify, there are some exempt materials that don't are not subject to sales tax.
So in this particular example, we may not get much sales tax.
We may or may not.
Because I can see where, you know, if they're selling it to an end user, using it to, say, lubricate machinery or something, I would think that was a taxable event.
It very well may be. I don't know if Heidi, if you want to add anything, you know quite a bit about this, too. Yeah. Oh, yes, there's personal property tax.
And that's what I was going to add. I know a lot of these companies, when they go and put in their conveyor belt systems, that they are really expensive, sometimes upwards of value of $1 million, and they pay personal property taxes on all of that equipment that goes to work. So when you look at the Amazon building, not only do we generate the sales tax from the Amazon point of sales, but we generate personal property taxes from their vast system of robots and warehousing, shelving, racking, and the conveyor belts and all that. So, and those permits are really big permits when they come and apply for those. So,
Thank you.
Are those personal property taxes a one-time tax or is that an ongoing tax?
It's a yearly tax. Yearly,
yeah.
Another question, Mayor. Is there a zoning delineation, or is it just all commercial, i.e. could a city end up with a lot of property tax generating but not sales tax generating businesses? Because if it's zoned commercial, then we can't technically say no? Or how does a city end up with a good mix of those two?
So we have use tables in each one of the zones, and there is a mix of wholesale businesses, and then there's a mix of retail businesses. And we try to focus those retail businesses more along Highway 89 or where there's vehicular traffic that can support those businesses. And then in the center of the industrial park is a lot where more of the wholesale businesses come in because they don't need that frontage, they don't need that curb appeal to their customers because their customers aren't necessarily coming to their location. So there's no right or wrong formula that says you should have 30% of this kind of business and 50% of that kind. And I wish there was. I wish it was that easy.
I have a question, and this is maybe for you, Heidi. What percentage of our budget income comes from the industrial zone.
Do we know? Do you have a mic, Heidi?
What percentage of our, you know, income, our...
Our total income, personal property, property, sales tax, all of that. We'd have to go and take a look. We don't get sales tax data, obviously, by area, but we can tell by industry.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we do get the information on the individual outlets. Property tax is a little bit more difficult because it's reported in aggregate by the county audit or the assessor's office. So we might be able to have them pull some reports if we have maybe a legal description of that area, if they can give us the parcels. It can be done. It would be tricky, but it could be done.
Somewhere, I thought it was one-third. Somewhere I read that or something.
Well, I think Heidi's absolutely right that it's just a little more complex. We could tell you, probably we could get close with a property tax report. Yeah. But there is sales and use tax. If these are utility users, they're going to have a sales and use tax. If they generate sales tax, it'll be something different.
Is there any way we could arrive at the number based on location, like the actual figure that we say, okay, from this zoned area, we're bringing in X amount?
Potentially on the sales tax, we could do that analysis ourselves. Mm-hmm. Other than that, the property tax information, as granular as it gets for what I receive, would be the personal property, commercial and residential, and we can kind of go from there.
Alrighty.
I know that as my observation is sales tax and property tax used to be kind of equal in our city, about 40% each. And I think the sales tax is now almost double our property tax. Mm-hmm. And as you look at our city, we don't have a lot of retail per se, and you know, we're not Riverdale or something, you know, and I was even concerned. One time I saw that Rand Auto was our largest sales tax provider, and they still have their lot in our city, but they bought the one across the street in Bountiful, and if they're transacting across the street, are we losing out on that sales tax? And I believe we are. Mm-hmm. But the other side of that is we have this, all this activity out in the industrial park that I don't understand where it's all coming from, but I think it's been a real bonus to our city. But
I'll second the tenor of the question from Lisa, that I would love to understand better the composition of our revenue, but I did just want to also highlight that so sales tax is half distributed based on the point of sale. If you buy something from Amazon, your home is the point of sale. So our residential areas are generating a lot more tax revenue than we think they are.
Mm-hmm. Especially yes.
I'm doing very well.
Linda's house and Suzette's house. Okay. Thank you for that little deviation. That was interesting.
Yeah, it's a good on-the-spot question, all right.
Do we have anything else we want to talk about in the budget priority? I think we covered that.
No.
Next item is approval of the council minutes. And I know we've had some changes. Suzette, did you get yours too, or do you need to?
Yeah, I emailed Wendy, and she was very kind and got back to me, but just changing to more accurate, that I opened with a thought, prayer, and pledge.
I submitted those early to Wendy and CC'd Ken and the mayor on it, and there were just corrections. If she wants to read them out loud, Wendy, that'd be fine. Just so you know.
I can find it, Wendy.
I have one while you're looking. This is in the draft, or the working session, and it's on line 185, where I asked about the replacement plan for dead trees, and then David maybe can correct if this is at what he had indicated, but the minutes say David Franson replied that staff assessed the trees and replaced the dead trees, and I'm not certain that all the dead trees are getting replaced, so I'm not sure if that's as accurate, but David can decide if that's how he wants it said, but I think maybe that the staff is assessing the dead trees and making a decision based on which need replacing.
The changes from Councilmember Baskin. I'll read those. The first are lines 396 and 397, which would now read, Google Fiber made her landline inoperable when it installed Google Fiber and has been very difficult to work with in correcting the error. As a council member, she has maintained her landline in cases of emergencies when cell towers may no longer function. There are implications for funding for dispatch and 911 services also. That's how that would change. Sorry, I have to change glasses. Oh, that's so much better. Okay, lines 450 and 451. This would be the new language. Baskin reported on HB 489, which made it an option for a candidate running in a nonpartisan race to list on the ballot whether the candidate is a Republican or a Democrat. She spoke against this concept and expressed concern over the slippery slope of infusing unnecessary and undesirable partisanship in local races. She reported she would oppose this bill as a member of the City Council at the Capitol when it went before a standing committee and informed the council of her position. Council members Jackson and Knowlton acknowledged this was a problem.
That's correct. Okay.
That was the correct language I read, yes.
Just so you, and I honestly don't know who the cable company was, but just so you know, Google's not really singling us out. They were drilling a cable this morning on 3rd South in front of my building. And I got a text an hour ago that the Copper Onion does not have any restrooms now because they punctured the sewer line going into the building. So something about those cable companies. Any other corrections or additions to this? I'll entertain a motion on this.
Mayor, I'll make a motion. I move that the City Council approve meeting minutes from February 6, 2024 with stated corrections.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Those are approved. Next item is our action items. Anything on the action items?
Is there a schedule update on the general plan? Putting you on the spot.
I got the language last week from our attorney, so that's updated, and the consultant, he sent me the email today that said that they are perfectly fine with that change in the language, and so we're just getting those signed, and then we're going to schedule the kickoff meeting. So I'll be meeting with him either later this week or first of next week to get our schedules shored up. So I will have an update for you at the next council meeting at the latest.
Anything else on action items?
I have a question. I don't know if this will be an action item. We've talked so much in council about the railroad overpass, and given Councilmember Baskin's concerns, I wonder where the decision-making process is, if it's stalled out, if it's something that we would have to take forward action to move forward, or if no action means we're not moving forward, if that's a conversation we should bring up as a discussion again, but just maybe a little update about that.
So it hasn't stalled out. The council approved an expenditure with Horrocks Engineering, and we asked them to look at the longer span bridge. That was the bridge that Union Pacific approved. During the course of that, let me finish that thought. On the 19th of March, I believe it is, the second meeting in March, Horrocks will come and report to the council and present their findings on that issue. We looked also at Stan Porter's question before he retired from the council, and I think I've already reported back to you that it's not feasible, but we'll get a written report from Horrocks and from our, and we have also engaged the services of a railroad engineering company. So Horrocks has done a lot, but they have a consultant, yes.
What was Stan's question?
Oh, it was rerouting the Woods Cross Industrial Lead, which is the westernmost track, so north of 1100 North, you would take that track, if feasible, and merge it with the mainline track at some point north of 11th North, and thereby eliminating the need for the Woods Cross Industrial Lead to cross 11th North.
That is a clever question.
Yeah, it involved also taking the spur connection that was for the petroleum business on 11th North at the lead and reversing it. So, and that would mean then that no trains would cross 11th North on the industrial lead somehow. So we did investigate that. I thought the idea had some merit to it. It was worth looking into, but we'll get a report on that. And then finally, as I've been working with these two folks, we will present to you a third option that you'll be able to consider, which would be in compliance with Union Pacific rules. But it would be very distasteful to Woods Cross and might be equally disruptive to the neighborhood. So you'll have some good choices. I'm not super optimistic that this is a project that will have a heartbeat at the end of all of our work, but I think it's absolutely essential that we go through the work of looking at all the options. I think that's been a really important piece of what should have driven us to get to this point, and it has. You know, it's been many years that we've been looking at this, but I do think we could get to a conclusion here in March where the council could make some real decisions, and then we can move ahead on other more exciting things like trees and stuff.
So I'm not very good at articulating, but I have this vision of coming back to Center Street. And, you know, so we think in terms of this road has to go up over the tracks in a rather short period space, and it just would be too steep, and because you have the I-15 right there. But I guess I keep envisioning ending the street at the railroad tracks, before the railroad tracks, and splitting the lanes out as far as it needs to go for a gradual, and bringing it back in. So you'd have the westbound going like this, and the eastbound going like this. And I can just envision that that would work, but I can't convince any engineer that it could. So I don't know why it wouldn't work, but I mean, if you had to go out a mile, you know, to get the height.
So money, yeah, but yeah.
And I don't think you'd have to go very far even. But it seems like that would work, and then we don't have to deal with Woods Cross, and we have our real problem area covered. But
well, it's not. I think it's reasonable to think that if we could answer the question on 11th North, then we could move to Center Street and look at a variety of options. I don't think they're less expensive. I think in some ways they're harder, but I think going through a process on Center Street is probably a good thing for us to do. And we can investigate all the ideas, not just yours, but you could start playing tennis with the old city engineer and see if
I can just envision this. It would be pretty even.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'm sorry if I said stalled out. That was very dismissive behind-the-scenes work that I know is going into that.
Well, in fairness, I feel stalled out. Yeah. You know, they totally took the wind out of our sails.
Yeah. And
anyway. Okay, let's go to council reports. Ted, can we start with you?
Okay. I reported at the last council meeting that the UDOT Commission would be coming out with their list of projects for the Utah Trail Network funding. They did come out with that list, and some of you are aware of this, but maybe not all of you, that the Utah Trail Network segment that would run roughly from our southern border along Highway 89 north into Woods Cross and terminating at 1500 North, because that is the cross street that gets you to the Front Runner station, ranked number 4 statewide, which is very, very high. Now, that's out of a list that had already been culled back. So they had whatever, 250 projects that they brought down to 42, and then they ranked those, and then we became number 4. There's certainly no guarantee that we get funded through that, but it's a pretty good bet. If not in the first year, almost certainly in the second year, with major caveats that include, as they dig into it more, they still feel that way, and that they find receptive communities, us and Woods Cross. So I wanted to relay that. I think that, so the next steps are that they have said that they will be reaching out, they, UDOT staff, will be reaching out to staff and council. I'm not really sure how they're going to do it in the coming weeks. I assume they have not done that yet. And then in their, I think it is their May meeting, they will actually make a decision. So that's a fairly significant opportunity for North Salt Lake trail improvement along Highway 89. I'm not sure I can answer any detailed questions about it beyond what I've said, but I'm happy to try if that's helpful. But that's one thing, and I'll just keep on trucking unless there's a question on that. All right. Budget update. So we all went through our laundry list. Can you talk through, Ken, what is the idea then that, staff will kind of noodle on perhaps the cost of those things, or how do the ideas that we shared tonight, what happens to those in the budget retreat?
So that's a great question. And some of what you suggested can be expressed in terms of dollars and cents. Other things are a little less specific, perhaps. But I think to the extent that we can put these proposals into the budget, we will do that for certain. And then I think it would be good for us to include these in a council, maybe a council goal document for 2024. We had a similar sort of process last year, for some of you remember that maybe. As an example, one of yours, Councilmember Knowlton, is making sure there's funds to implement general plan goals and policies. That is of the new general plan that we're going to create. So we may take a guess at that, but I do think there's a way to express that in the budget, even though we may not know what the goals and policies priorities are quite yet. Or we may put a placeholder in somehow, or make a note in our adoption of the budget that that's something we'll want to do. Some of these we will noodle on them, and probably some of what you've raised all of you may require the expenditure of funds for some expertise or some consulting services, but we will try our best to put a dollar amount to these, to what you have suggested to us, so that you'll have a way to adopt or not adopt or whatever you're going to do with them. It's kind of a vague answer.
No, that's okay.
I'm not trying to be vague. I was
simply hoping by raising the question that it would cause you to noodle. So.
Oh, I'm noodling. It hurts my head. That's how much I'm noodling. It's a great word.
I will not be here in our next council meeting. And then last thing, so the Pew Trust had a big national survey about zoning, and I thought I would relay one tidbit from it. So they asked a bunch of questions about where you want different, let's call it workforce housing, where you want apartments to be allowed within a city or a region geographically. Like, they sliced and diced it a whole bunch of different ways, asked people questions. The tied for the highest support total was the phrase, allow more apartments to be built near train stations, bus stations, or major job centers. I don't know if we all think that actually approximates our town center. You could argue either way, but that was the phrase that had most support, 80%. And then from the Guiding Our Growth survey of 20,000 Utahns, 75% of Utahns favored having growth occur at least within city and town centers. I just thought I'd pass that along, that's perhaps the geography for growth, apartments, housing especially, that finds the most commonality among Utahns.
You know, I just want to add, I think Senator Wyler tipped his hand there.
Well, we're going to take the hard decisions away from you guys so you can get reelected.
And, you know, we've always made tough choices on this council. That's what we do. And that's why we were elected. Yeah. But they're going to use that as their excuse to take it power away. But. Suzette.
Well, I know that you'd mentioned this, Mayor, in a few months ago, but I decided to do a little deeper dive into it, and a lot of cities right now are rethinking and relooking at putting fluoride in their water. And one thing that sparked my interest is there's a large lawsuit going on right now in the U.S. District Court in Northern California. You can watch it. I've been checking in. You can follow it online. If they end up winning, then the EPA will most likely have to rule that fluoride is not safe to put in the water, and this will become a moot point. But there is a long way before that would ever happen. It's just a long process. Right now, currently, the EPA is working under the Safe Drinking Water Act. And so basically it states that it is illegal for the federal government to put fluoride in the water because of the harms of fluoride. But the interesting loophole to me is that the federal government can't medicate the water, but the mayor and city council can. So municipalities can. I was diving into the history of how this all came about, and I find it horrifying, but maybe you'll find it interesting and not. So back in the 1950s, both the nitrogen fertilizing companies and aluminum processing companies plants started having major problems with all of the land, water, animals were just dying. Everything around the plants were dying. And the problem was that a byproduct of both of those industries is fluoride coming out of the smokestacks. So what they were required to do is put caps on the smokestacks. And those caps basically caught the fluoride, it condensed, and it turned into a substance called hydrofluorosilic acid. But then what to do with these big drums of highly toxic hydrofluoric acid? Interestingly, I thought, the lobbyist that lobbied to put lead into our paint was the same lobbyist that said, and this was his big plug, that dilution of the pollution is the solution. And so he lobbied that if they took these big bins or tubs or whatever they call them of hydrofluorosilic acid, sold them to the cities diluted it down to a lower than hazard level, which that's a whole nother rabbit hole, then they could put it in the drinking water. So for decades, we've been told that fluoride was good for our teeth, but I don't know how much we've been told about the harms of actual fluoride. And I looked into that. And one thing I found out is that anyone with kidney disease cannot express fluoride, and so it does build up as a toxic level. By the 70s, any dialysis center with fluoridated water realized they had to take it out because all of their kidney patients couldn't get rid of it. And so I'm just wondering whether all of those in our city with kidney disease are even aware of that fact, because they have an impaired ability to secrete fluoride. Fluoride is also a known neurotoxin. There are actually 64 out of 72 NIH-funded studies that show that fluoride has a direct link to lowering IQ by 6 to 9 points. There's a long history on that, but those are all NIH well-bodied, large studies, and they had to be FOIA'd to be released, but they were released last year. I actually suffered from fluoride toxicity, and I even knew that. Like, my dentist even told me, and I never thought about it, but if you get white spots on your two front teeth, that's fluoride toxicity. If it gets worse than that, then your teeth just turn yellow, which is kind of counterintuitive to the point of fluoride in the water. But the highest risk population are actually formula-fed babies, because all they consume is our water and formula. And they're so small, and so that concentration of fluoride in such little bodies cause IQ problems, developing teeth problems, neuromuscular problems. And there's no dispute that fluoride weakens bones. Interestingly, most studies show osteoporosis in older women causing hip fractures. That's the largest correlation that they've found. Fluoride also causes osteoarthritis. The only question there in the studies is the dose, but it is showing good evidence that Americans are getting enough fluoride that it is causing osteoarthritis. Also, fluoride is what used to be used to counteract hyperthyroidism. And so it's a known entity to lower your thyroid function. The problem with that is that most Americans now suffer from hypothyroidism, which makes us fat. And so fluoride is known to reduce your thyroid level. So if you're already hypothyroid, then you're getting more hypothyroidism. So I've just highlighted a few of the questionable, scary health problems. But then the question is, do we need it? And I couldn't find any studies that showed that consumption of fluoride actually helped with tooth decay. Now, fluoridated toothpaste, mouthwash that you spit out, yes. The high concentrated dental procedures, yes. But I couldn't find any that showed that consumption actually helped with tooth decay. Fluoride is the only medication that we put in our water. We treat our water for water cleanliness, but it's the only medication. And I found out that you can't filter it out. You have to buy a high, kind of an expensive reverse osmosis, like Brita, fridge, they don't filter out fluoride. So for like those kidney disease residents, then the burden becomes they have to either buy that or they have to drink bottled or spring water. So in Europe, the precedent was set that you don't add medicine to the water because it takes away informed consent and the individual right to make their own health decisions. They also stated that there are plenty of accessible, affordable fluoridated products like toothpaste and mouthwash. And so currently only England and Ireland even allow that. Only about 4% of the world allows fluoride in their water. And I was looking at a study, and it showed multiple countries over the last 70 years, and tooth decay went down at almost the exact rate in all of those countries. But again, only a couple of those countries put fluoride in their water, and so it's been attributed to just better oral hygiene and education, that people are brushing more, and we have toothpaste. And so fluoride doesn't even register on one of the reasons why our tooth decay as country by country are going down at about the same rate. So despite all of this, why do we do it? Is it helping? Is it hurting? What is the history? I also thought about just informed consent. Do people know the harms of the medication that we're putting into the public drinking water? And then what are the tax costs to North Salt Lake? So we're spending money to buy it. We're spending money to, quite frankly, put our public health workers at some level of risk dealing with it. We're spending money to have them check it, the hazard levels, on a regular basis. There are large, large lobby organizations, the ADA, American Dental Association is one of them, that for years have told us that this is good, this is good. They haven't told us why it's good, just it helps your teeth. So I find that a lot of people dogmatically believe, yes, we should have fluoride in our water. If you say otherwise, you're a conspiracy theorist. But no one can really answer why they believe that so strongly. Probably millions of dollars in propaganda or commercials is why. But I wonder whether, if back when the North Salt Lake residents voted to have it in, if they knew that you might potentially reduce tooth decay, but definitely those with kidney disease will be a harm. It'll cause bone density issues, thyroid issues. It's a known neurotoxin that can reduce your child's IQ. It's linked to ALS. It's linked to Alzheimer's. If they still would have voted the same. I think we didn't have the same knowledge then as we have now. And so I just think it's a slippery precedent to have government medicating water, whether it's fluoride, vaccines, other medications. Our city pays with tax money. It's a toxin. And so I would like to propose that either we put this up to another vote, but with information, an information campaign, and the ability to truly give informed consent, or as a city council, we just vote to remove fluoride. We'll save money, and we could avoid potential problems with medicating our water.
Thank you. I want to just say a couple things. I first became aware of this years ago as, here's this incredibly toxic substance. What do we do with it? How do we get rid of it? Well, let's put it in the water. So that seems counterintuitive to me. I have a family full of dentists, and they will say that they can tell their patients that come from cities that have fluoridated water. So that may be anecdotal, but I think it does help teeth. The amount of water that we drink is so small that, I always look at my grass and go, does that fluoride help my grass grow better? Because that's where most of it's going. And so, generally speaking, there's such better ways to administer fluoride. But having said that, we've gone to the expense of putting this all in, and is it that ship's sailed already, or is it worth reexamining? Ken, I want you to weigh in, because I'm just asking honest questions.
So I'll limit my way into the steps that Councilmember Jackson is proposing. I think, as I understand it, and I was not here at the time, the citizens of North Salt Lake voted to add fluoride to the water system. So I may kick this football over to Todd, but I would think that if you wish to make a change to that, that you would need to have your voters tell you again what they would direct, but I could be wrong. I don't know, Todd.
I actually don't know the answer to that right now.
We'll look at and see.
Well, because I do. I know the history on this. So North Salt Lake did vote to put fluoride in the water. 25 years ago? And then there was a group that said, no, don't do it. Don't do it. And it was going to be, it went before the county. The county didn't want to implement it. And so David Irvine had to sue to see that it was enacted and implemented. And as it turned out, he won, that the fluoride should be in the water, but he also was able to achieve what's called a private right of action and get attorney's fees. So it cost the county probably $250,000 in attorney's fees because there were individuals that didn't want it to be implemented, right? And so the legal ramifications of it were very negative in terms of what it cost the citizens, the taxpayers, to defend this measure. That's the history on it. In terms of all that you've said, in terms of academic research and so forth, you're catching me kind of cold because it's something that I haven't studied. So I really can't make a comment whether or not it's something to pursue. So it, from my perspective, it's something that I need to look at independently, which I will. But I'm not inclined right now to go with this. I just think, I don't think that it is considered highly toxic. And I also think it has medical benefits that exceed the dangers. But I will study it.
Yeah. I would like to add that I've been approached by residents in the city that have to buy bottled water because they have a child that's highly susceptible to fluoride. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's some people out there that obviously go to great lengths to avoid it. And I don't remember the amount, but it wasn't much, like an ounce or something. If you swallow an ounce of fluoride toothpaste, you're supposed to call the Poison Control Center and get medical attention. So it, you know, they're recognizing there's some toxicity to it. But anyway, so, interesting.
Mayor, do you mind if I ask Councilmember Baskin a question? Was this a countywide vote?
Yeah, I think it was.
Because it went before the county attorney.
So not a city vote.
I thought it was a county vote. I think it was countywide. Maybe Delos, but I thought it was countywide.
I was here at the time. I voted against it because, as Mayor said, that little tiny bit of water that we drink, the amount of fluoride that you get out of it is very minimal. You get more out of it by going to the dentist every 6 months. It very passed, I think the first time it was voted down, came back around and they said, well, we got to do it, so it got voted in. But it was, I think if it went back right now, that probably it's a, just shut off the machine and forget it. I think it would be more cost effective to the city if they handed out fluoride pills to those who desired them and took the fluoride out of the water, because my grass and my garden really doesn't need fluoride.
Can I ask a question? Ken, if you're looking into this, before I made a decision on this, I would like to know what the cost would be to the city to add this as a ballot question. And that would be important in weighing whether or not this is an issue I would be interested in taking on. If it's a high cost to put it on the ballot, that would affect my decision.
Well, and would it be offset by the cost of eliminating the fluoride? But yeah.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Maybe a question of a water guy, Dave Branson, or tell me what you know.
Yeah, maybe we should have started with
and we've heard this expert. Story about how you accidentally spilled some fluoride and the whole sidewalk melted or something.
Yeah, it's dangerous. I mean, dealing with it, this stuff is gnarly. It's horrible. Like what it does to these buildings and what it does if it gets on the ground, it's crazy. If you get like a drop in your eye, you're blind. I would say without going to pretend to be a doctor or anything else, I mean, if you look at what percentage of water is actually consumed, it's like a 0.1%. Again, the pills are more effective. The toothpaste is more effective. It does make your teeth yellow. Cities that have high fluoride in their water already, like there's a lot of cities like in Minnesota and up in that area, people all have yellow teeth. Our water, I don't know what it is here naturally, but a lot of it, we were in Murray, it was like 0.4 parts per million, and we were putting it to 0.7. So it already had natural fluoride in the water. And as far as just maintaining the buildings and the piping, that this stuff, it just eats them up. It's horrific from a maintenance standpoint. I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to pretend to be a doctor on the rest of the stuff.
How many parts per million do we have in the water?
Naturally.
Oh, in the water naturally.
So they're 0.3 here.
In the water naturally.
And then we go up to 0.7, 0.8, he said, which is what we're supposed to do. But it's, yeah, the dosing pumps, it destroys stuff. It's pretty gnarly.
So the genesis of this was all after a meeting, Randy Elliott pulled me aside and said, is there any pushback in your city on fluoride? And I said, I hear a little bit sometimes. And he made me think it might be coming up on the ballot countywide. Now, he's not running now, so I don't know if it died with him or if it's something the other commissioners are thinking about. I've got COG tomorrow. I could ask, generally speaking, but this is an interesting discussion. That's what I guess I look at.
Another question, I think, and I don't know, maybe the more expert people here know, if this was originally voted in as a county-level decision, are we allowed to opt out as a city, or does this have to be a county vote to counteract that as
well? Yeah, we'll look and see what the process would be.
And maybe, I'm just interested, because I have no idea, scale-wise, what the cost is to the city, not only for the product, but then maybe some sort of,
I think, to put the equipment in was huge to start with.
I would add just one other thing to consider is that so there's public costs and there's private costs, and if the aggregate, I don't know this. Like Lisa, I'm cold on this, but if we were to find that the aggregate dental cost savings for private citizens way outweighed our public costs, then that's part of the calculus too. It's not just our public cost.
And I've had advocates for fluoride bring up that there are an element of our society, and I think they're on the lower end of the economic, that they don't go to the dentist, they don't have good dental hygiene. This forces them, you know, and I brought up, well, let's give them pills. They won't take them, you know, you gotta. So it's kind of that force.
But I do think in that vein, so do we force everyone to take something for a small population?
Good. Yeah.
And again, going back to the, is it government's role to medicate the water? I mean, everyone doesn't take vitamin C, and maybe they all should. Maybe we go to the doctor less, so slippery slope.
Americans are lacking in vitamin D, generally speaking. We could put that in the water, too.
Very high-funded studies on vitamin
D. All right.
D. Right.
Well, thank you for that discussion. Lisa?
I don't have anything.
Tammy? Oh, sorry.
That's my sister.
I looked right at Lisa.
I whatever just have a couple things.
Call it Van Leggen.
So, like the mayor mentioned, we visited with the principal at Orchard Elementary, which she was lovely and was really happy to partner with the city. And so we talked about several ways that The city can start partnering with our schools, and this is something I've talked about before in council meeting, and we've started the ball rolling with some of these programs and kind of piloted them at Foxborough Elementary, but I just wanted to let the rest of the council know that some of the things that we were talking about as far as the partnering with these schools. We talked about the golf course field trip that we've already done with Foxborough, but we'll be offering that, and the Orchard School was very excited about that field trip opportunity. We talked about other city field trips, potentially having the Orchard kids walk down to City Hall. We could do a field trip here. I know it's in the third grade that they learn about municipal government, and so we could talk about those. And when I offered these things, I also want you to know that I offered myself as the person that would come and kind of host and teach those. I'm not always offering just staff time for that. I also said that I, for myself as a city council member, would be happy to go into the school to do classroom visits to talk about their municipal lessons if they were interested in that, and I asked them to invite us as a city council to some of their school events if they were interested, their school plays, their end of year activities, that we would love to build that collaboration between the city staff or the city council and the schools. The mayor talked to them about the ULCT essay contest. We would love to see a winner coming from North Salt Lake. And then I asked if I invited their Martin Luther King Jr. speech contest winners to come to City Council and to give those speeches here in City Council meetings. So that might be coming up, which I think is really exciting. And then the last thing that I wanted to mention is just a consideration of food truck nights that are coming up. As you know, we've used some of those food truck nights to do the Unity in the Community events, and I am interested in potentially expanding that, not with Unity in the Community, but some small ideas that we could include that community engagement would be having a food truck night that was dedicated to a particular school. So we would just say this is the Orchard Elementary food truck night. We wouldn't really do anything extra aside from they would be kind of advertising, and we would probably invite the school administration to come down and have a booth where they could just say hello to people. And then we do have the back-to-school food truck night that is already existing, and just making sure that we invite all the schools that they... Last year, we had Mueller Park Junior High administration, which was there that night, which was very cool, but just making sure that we invite all of the elementary schools as well. And then one thing we had talked about that we will continue to talk about, I'm not asking for commitments tonight, is the potential of having a city booth at the food truck night. We have those on the nights that are the health and wellness committee nights where we can answer questions about the city. But the idea of the city booth is it could be staffed as a rotation. So those of us here and then potentially members of staff as well would probably take one or two times throughout the entire season where they would just go sit down at the food truck nights at the city booth and answer questions about the city. And even if it is the community development night where they are sitting operating the booth and they're getting a question about the city budget, it's not that you have to know all the answers. It's just that you can then reference people to where they could find those answers. And so that is still a potential. In health and wellness, we're going to talk more about our ideas and expectations for food trucks, but that is coming up. That's all.
Thank you. Tammy?
The only thing that I was going to just have you maybe put on your calendars is the Youth Council has been busily filling Easter eggs for the Easter Egg Dash that's coming up on March 30th. And so that would be fun if City Council represented that and the mayor. And I did have a question, not to bring this back up, but has something ever that's been voted, been put back on a ballot and re-voted and
sure.
taken it? Oh, okay. I just wondered how that worked. Okay, that's my question. That's all for me.
Yeah, we'll try and answer that question for you. Related to the fluoride question, of course.
Thank you. Anything on the city attorney report, Todd?
No, Mayor.
Thank you. I don't have a lot. I did bring up the hardship policy here. Once we start bundling, I think we're headed for mandatory recycling in our community. And I've always taken the position it's better to not create it than to have to recycle it, but it's good to recycle what you do create. We are still fighting with the largest city in the county to get on board, and that may still prove an interesting thing. We have opening on the rec center board. It's a county appointment. at-large position. So if, you know, if your life's going really smoothly right now and you need some challenge in your life, the Rec Center Board is an option. And that's all I have. Ken?
I don't actually have anything tonight. I would normally report on the legislative session, but we had our representatives with us. I thought that was really great, and they have been very responsive to us, and have voted 100% with us, which doesn't always happen with our two legislators. But this time, they've been really thoughtful, and taken more time this year than in past years. And maybe that's because we're all together, we're all building a better relationship with them. But I think they've done a good job for us this year. We don't always agree, and I mean, when I say we, everyone involved, lobbyists, attorneys, there's lots of groups at the legislature every week. Todd Godfrey, our attorney, is involved in several different ways. And yet somehow we mostly come up with good legislation. It's a mystery to me how it starts out so horrible and ends up so good, but it's because of the efforts of a lot of people, including you guys, who are not shy about reaching out to your legislators. So I guess I did have something to say, but thank you for that. And I'm just grateful it's almost over. Oh, I'm getting a note. Oh, yes. Thank you. This is a bit, this is a ways away, but you guys, we've told you this was coming. So we will have at the fire district training for newly elected officials. Anyone can go to this training. It will be on Saturday, April 27th, and we think it will be a half day, 8 a.m. to sometime after lunch or noonish. And Wendy will send out the location. Thank you for that reminder, Wendy. We did talk about that earlier today.
Is that training related to the fire district?
Yes. It's not,
it's not just
you're not learning how to be a firefighter. Yeah. It's not that kind of training. It's in the vein of council orientation with the fire department, which when we don't operate our own fire department, you would have had that training if we had our own. But they like to combine. So it is a good opportunity for at least the two of you new members to go meet other new members in the five cities. This is an area we've talked a little bit about in the past, but it's good to know your fellow city council members in other communities.
Everybody's blaming everything on Wisconsin.
Yes, or it just depends. You know, tonight we heard.
Yeah, we heard picked on Woods Cross enough. We're going to go to West Bountiful.
We heard a little bit of disparaging about Centerville and how they didn't like people driving through Centerville. So. I don't know what they say about us when we're not in the room. I don't really ask, and I don't care. So. Okay, that's all I've got.
Thank you. Anything else? Anyone? Heidi, was that a raise your hand, or are you just adjusting your glasses? All right, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second. Thank you. We're adjourned.